First of all, thank you so much, Colby. That was amazing. What a blessing you are to us. Thank you. Today's scripture is from John chapter 2, verses 1 through 11, and it's found on page 1050 in your pew Bible, if that's what you're using. Jesus changes water to wine. On the third day, a wedding took place at Cana in Galilee. Jesus' mother was there, and Jesus and his disciples had also been invited to the wedding. When the wine was gone, Jesus' mother said to him, "They have no more wine." "Dear woman, why do you involve me?" Jesus replied. "My time has not yet come." His mother said to the servants, "Do whatever he tells you." Nearby stood six stone water jars, the kind used by the Jews for ceremonial washing, each holding from 20 to 30 gallons. Jesus said to the servants, "Fill the jars with water." So they filled them to the brim. Then he told them, "Now draw some out and take it to the master of the banquet." They did so, and the master of the banquet tasted the water that had been turned into wine. He did not realize where it had come from, though the servants who had drawn the water knew. Then he called the bridegroom aside and said, "Everyone brings out the choice wine first and then the cheaper wine after the guests have had too much to drink. But you saved the best till now." This, the first of his miraculous signs, Jesus performed at Cana in Galilee. He thus revealed his glory, and his disciples put their faith in him.
Thank you, Yvette. Marking time. Perhaps you noticed this already, but we're about 4 weeks after Christmas, right? So before Christmas, we're very attentive to the calendar. After Christmas, Now, why this is interesting to me, because on Christmas, we celebrated the birth of a baby, right? It's lovely, right? But let me tell this story. So my wife and I, we have two daughters. So the anticipation of the arrival of the first daughter was filled with great hope and excitement and unknown expectations. About 4 weeks in, we realized, right? All of the patterns that we had in our lives were now disrupted, right? So example, I remember Thursday evenings were wonderful. I would go play basketball at the local high school gym. My wife would go out with her friends to a movie or something like that. But once Emily arrived, someone had to be there. We didn't realize how all of our schedules, all of our patterns, everything that we had established was now disrupted. Once we established some sense of equilibrium and we figured out how to share responsibilities and what that looked like, we had a second. And again, we had to work through the new dynamics that this new life and responsibility meant for us. Okay. The season that we're in, the church has often referred to the season after Christmas these days as the season of Epiphany. Aha, right? The great aha. Oh, it's more like, oh, this is what this baby is about, right? We often think about it in very glowing and loving terms. This baby has arrived for us. This season of Epiphany invites us to say, the magnitude of this is far beyond what we even imagined or expected. This is what this is about? Oh my. Are we on board with it? Are we going to follow? And so our text today is one of these first epiphanies, if you will, this first showing, this insight into who this Jesus is. If you will, if we look to the passage, and if you have what we've often referred to as the red letter editions of the Bible, those Bibles where that they attribute these phrases and words to Jesus, you will see in this opening story, this wedding feast in Cana, Jesus is the protagonist. He's the main character. Jesus is the primary character here. But he says very little. He has just three short statements in the entire episode. And yet the whole story is illuminated by his presence and his ministry. And those around him beginning to say, ah, this is who this Jesus is. And as we listen to this retelling of the story, it points us beyond the ordinariness of this wedding feast. It begins to illuminate for us who this Jesus is and is becoming for the disciples, for these followers, for us. And it's going to invite us to belief in the God who creates and recreates time and time and time again. And so in these moments together, we'll listen to the narrative. We'll look at the scene. We'll respond to the good work that God is desiring to do in us and among us. And in St. John's telling of this narrative, you'll notice this wedding feast, it unfolds in a series of scenes, episodes, moments, perhaps even with a little commercial break in between. I mean, it's one way that we can walk through the scenes of this particular narrative. The opening scene finds the wedding celebration at center stage, and as was the custom, the wedding is situated in the context of a feast. Marriage and feast, they go together. Feast, abundance. Celebration, wedding feast and marriage, creation, life and more life. It's a great party. There's a lot of energy in this place. This is a celebration. It's feast day. And as our eyes wander across the room and we scan through all of the guests that are there, and because it was such a big deal, it was a community-wide event, we find Mary along with Jesus and some of his new friends in attendance. The wedding feast is a big deal. Everyone's coming. It's big news in town, and everyone desires to be on the guest list. Everyone wants in on a feast. And so there it is. We see Mary and Jesus and some of these new friends that he's brought along. And there's music and there's dancing and there's food and there's drink and there's wedding and feast linked together and more music and more dancing and more food and more drink and feast and abundance and celebration. Everyone wants to be there. This is where we want to live. We want to live in a land of feast, celebration. And then a sudden and dramatic scene shift. The wine runs dry. A certain embarrassment for the host. But in the scene, Mary moves across the floor and she whispers to Jesus, Jesus, they've run out of wine. Embarrassment, scarcity, emptiness, a significant and dramatic scene change. Celebration, feast, abundance, scarcity, emptiness. Mary doesn't ask Jesus to do anything. She just leans over to him and says, they have run out of wine. Now, perhaps a do something about it message was implied in her tone of voice. Because Jesus seems to catch that subtle message. He says, why should that concern us? We're not hosts, we're the guests. Why should it concern you and me? And then Jesus compounds to that question the statement, my hour has not yet come. And these words, to those of us who know the story, right, who know and have read John's gospel, that phrase, my hour has not yet come, brings chills up and down our spine. We know what that means. My hour has not yet. It points forward. That short, simple statement in various forms and on different occasions will be repeated throughout the Gospel of John numerous times. My hour has not yet come. My time has not yet come. My time has not yet come. The phrase Jesus uses there points us forward. But why? Why does he say my hour is not? To his mother at this time and in this moment. Better yet, what has she seen in Jesus that makes her certain, her very sure that he can somehow solve this dilemma? What has she seen in him? What has happened in the previous 30 years that made this expectation from her a possibility? This child of hers who arrived under dramatic predictions and holy visitations, right? We remember all of that. Who had chosen to stay with the family for a very long time, but now something is changing and she knows it. I mean, perhaps it's a mother's intuition. You see, John doesn't include the traditional birth narratives in his gospel. Rather, St. John links Jesus to creation. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. And in those opening words to the gospel, we hear the echoes of, in the beginning, God created. Perhaps it's a parent's intuition. Now Mary turns to the servants and says, "Do whatever he tells you." The power of a mother's words, right? Do whatever he tells you. And then Jesus, perhaps in a whispered hush to his mother, says, "Mom, not now, not now." Or perhaps with all of the servants' eyes drilling in on him, he says, "Not now, my hour has not yet come." She doesn't take Jesus' words as a no. She then proceeds to go to the servants and says, "Do whatever he tells you." And as the curtain closes on this scene, two words hang with us. My hour has not yet come. Do whatever he tells you to do. See, right, this babe born in Bethlehem that we celebrated, we didn't realize really what we were getting into. My hour has not yet come. We know what that's going to mean. The invitation for us, even here in this scene, do whatever he tells you to do. Obedience. And up until this point, Jesus has remained a wedding guest. And then, in a brief moment, Jesus shifts from guest to acting host. He says to the servants, "Fill the jars with water." And he points to the large jars that stand at the entrance of the house, ready for the household's purification rituals. It's clear that these jars are only to be used for water. The servants must have thought, "What is he doing? Is he going to trick or fool the guests somehow? Is this going to be some magician's sleight of hand? What is he doing?" My hour has not yet come. Do whatever he tells you to do. Fill the jars with water. Each phrase points us forward. Each phrase illuminates the action for us. And now another scene change, right? perhaps a commercial break. They've got a lot going on. We got to fill time, right? They got to go out and get the water, right? It must have taken quite a bit of time to fill the jars up. After all, they had no running water. It's not like they were running to the kitchen to fill them up. They had to go to the well to draw water. That process takes time. When the jars are full, the servants hear the next step in the unfolding drama. Jesus offers his third and final comment in the narrative. He says, "Now, draw out some out of the jars and take it to the chief steward." Take it to the man responsible for approval and serving the wine. The servants must have been mystified. What are you doing to us? They know the jars contain water. They just filled them from the well. Ordinary water came up from the well that they put into the jars, and now they see that the water perhaps has changed color. It looks different from what they put in there. What is going on here? And in the ritual manner of the wine steward, the man takes the ladle, he tastes the water. His eyes probably revealed the surprise. This is good stuff. This is really good stuff. My hour has not yet come. Do whatever he tells you to do. Fill the jars with water. Draw some out and take it to the chief steward. Crisis averted. The wedding feast continues. The final scene change. The chief steward goes to the original host and offers a mild criticism. No doubt the chief steward had served at many feasts and banquets, and he knows his wine, and more importantly, he knows proper protocol at these feasts. He tells the host, "You have saved the best for last. That is not how it is done. First you offer the best wine, and then when they are too drunk to notice, you offer the cheap stuff. That's how it's done. You have reversed the time-honored tradition." The scene ends. We're not told what the host thought, nor are we told what the host said. We're left to fill in the blanks. What John does tell us is that the disciples, those newly chosen, newly called, they believed in Jesus as a result of this water to wine transformation. They believed in this Jesus as a result of this holy showing, if you will, this epiphany, this revealing to them. Oh, this is who Jesus is. The one who takes scarcity, transforms it to abundance. The one that takes emptiness and transforms it to fullness. The one that takes certain death and dryness and transforms it to life and abundance. Oh. John emphasizes that this is the first sign that reveals that God's presence is unhindered within Jesus, that Jesus reveals God's glory. John restates the simple commands: fill the jars, draw some out. He does so in such a way that it lets us, the hearers, in on the secret. This is about creation and God. This is about water and wine. This is about baptism and communion. This is about life and more life, abundance. abundant life. Think of it. A very ordinary day when two young people are married. They've done this for ages and ages and ages, and a young man from Nazareth reveals that he is directly and intimately linked with the creative work of God unfolding throughout all of the cosmos. A sacred moment. This is not a magician's sleight of hand. It's not a card trick. This showing, this moment, throws open a window into the intimate connection between Jesus and creation, between Jesus and the Creator. God so loved all that God created, the entire cosmos. Right? We're going to read about this in the next chapter. God so loved all that God created that everyone who dares to give their hearts to God enters into the fullness of God's creative life, a life that never ends. That's what's going on here. Life. My time has not yet come. Do whatever he tells you to do. It's a new parent. We're saying, what did we get ourselves into? This is disruptive. Fill the jars with water. We don't do it that way. Draw some out and take it to the chief steward. We're not told what the host said. We're not told what the host thought. We're told his first disciples, newly chosen, newly called, believed in him. They believed in him. Here's a side note to the narrative, if you will, the scenes that aids our reading of today's gospel. Belief. They believed in him. Belief is a tricky word in a world filled with false stories circulated by news media outlets. Belief is a tricky word in a world consumed with fact checking. Belief as a way to systematize and verify just doesn't seem to fit. It seems that belief in our day and age has more to do with what happens in our brains than what takes place in our hearts. And this may be where our language inhibits us. We don't have a verb for faith. But that's what's going on here. They faithed in him. Simply put, throughout the New Testament, there is a very specific term that is used. Pistis in Greek. Leaning back into the Hebrew, aman is the Hebrew term. Looking forward into the New Testament, the Latin-speaking world, we're going to get credo, where we get creed. What ties them all together is that each of them contained the notion and conveyed the notion of a relationship of trust. Belief is not something that happens in our heads. As Jesus is unpacking this story for us, it's a way of trusting in relationship. A better way to say it is, I give my heart to. Right? It has everything to do with giving our hearts to Jesus, to leaning into this new way of life where the Word is made flesh. This new way of life where life is no longer about death. Life is no longer about scarcity, but it is about life and abundance. The abundant life we'll be told about soon. So returning to the text, we hear these phrases, my hour has not yet come. Do whatever he tells you to do. Fill the jars with water. Draw some out and take it to the chief steward. Crisis averted. Whew. Many probably didn't even know. The wedding feast continues. And the scene ends. Wait, no. So you and I, we're left to fill in the blanks. Think of it. On an ordinary day, I've done this often. Two people come to be married. A young man from Nazareth shows up as one of the guests. And in that scene, in that wedding feast, he reveals that he is directly and intimately linked with the creative work of God, the new life, the recreative life unfolding in their midst and throughout the cosmos. It's not a magician's sleight of hand move. It's not a card trick. God so loved all that God created that everyone who dares to give their hearts to God in Jesus enter into the fullness of God's creative life now and forever. It's an open window, an epiphany, an aha, an illumination, an insight. Ultimately, it's an invitation. We're not told what the host thought or said because we're supposed to put our feet in the sandals of the host. What are we going to say? What are we going to think? In whom are we going to offer our faith, our hearts, in trust? We are told the disciples, they had an epiphany. Oh, this is who you are. And they said, yes, we will follow you even though we don't fully understand yet what that phrase you said, my hour has not yet come, really means. We don't know what that means, but we're going to follow you. The scene ends. You're the host. Will you offer your heart and faith to this one who is revealing himself to us even now? This is the gospel of Jesus the Christ. Amen. I invite our musicians to come as we sing together and affirm our faith, our act of giving our hearts to God. And perhaps even today you might want to pray. If you want to come and kneel and pray, you are invited to do so, to offer yourself, your whole self, to this one who we don't really understand what it's all going to mean yet, but we're going to do whatever he tells us to do. Amen. Let us stand together and sing.